Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Dugout, Premier League preview, Football Social Daily.
It's Derby Day in Manchester in the Premier League this weekend as United welcome City to Old Trafford. It's been a bumpy road for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer in recent weeks. Will his tenure hit a roadblock on Saturday against Pep Guardiola's side? It was Ronnie on the spot late on for United midweek while City were in cruise control. How will things unfold in one of the Premier League's flagship fixtures? We'll discuss that on today's podcast, as well as a big game at Goodison. Everton beaten three times in a row now under Rafa. They face a Tottenham team with a fresh face in charge. How will the Antonio Conte era begin in the Premier League for Spurs? Plus, David Moyes' high-flying Hammers host a lively Liverpool side this weekend in the final round of fixtures before the next international break. This is The Dugout, the Premier League preview show from Sports Social featuring former top-flight professionals. My name's Niall McCorn, and joining me in The Dugout today, former West Ham and Wolves winger Matt Jarvis. Welcome back, Jarvo. How are you doing?
I'm very well, Niall. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. And we've also got ex-Burnley and Everton man Trevor Stephen back with us too. Good to have you on again, Trevor. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, thanks, Niall. Good to be with you again.
It must have been a bit of a mixed bag for you at the weekend, Trevor, because Burnley finally won, but Everton got beaten again.
Yeah, it's a little bit... We'll come to Everton, obviously, a little bit further down the show, but just good to see Burnley turning it around. I think that was my highlight, I think, of last weekend. I really like Sean Dyche, and again, we will talk about this in more depth. But yeah, an up and down one, but I'm a bit worried for Everton. You know, there's a nervousness about that club at the moment.
We just need one week when you're on the show, Trevor, where you're not worried about either Everton or Burnley, because it's either swinging one way or the other at the moment. We need to start with the Manchester derby, though, of course. The biggest game in the Premier League at the weekend for me, United against City at Old Trafford. 12:30 p.m. kickoff on Saturday. Let's start with Manchester United then, Jarvo. Ronaldo, again, midweek in the Champions League against Atalanta, came to the rescue, a goal in stoppage time at the end of the first half to make it 1-1, and then an equaliser in the dying seconds of the game to make it 2-2. Brilliant goals, both of them. I think for me, I find it really difficult to figure out what sort of display we might get from United, because they were a shambles against Liverpool and got battered. They demolished Tottenham 3-0 with a change of system, and yet they needed Ronaldo to drag them out of a hole against Atalanta in what some people are saying papered over the cracks. I think it's really hard to figure out what we might get from United this weekend. What do you think?
I think that's exactly what every fan, and even Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I think, is waiting to see. There's not that, you know, like Chelsea, you know what you're going to get with Chelsea. I think United, it's just throw the balls up in the air, and how they land is who knows. I think great performance, great result against Tottenham, but you knew that was going to happen. I think you knew they had to have a response from the really disappointing game against Liverpool. But then everyone goes on about, right, that's the stepping stone. We know it's not, you know, everything's not back to normal. We know we need to improve. We need to keep. And then the display against Atalanta is just not, it's just not good enough. And, you know, we talk about Ronaldo. There's not much more you can say about him. Two fantastic goals from someone that's just the best player in the world, and he has two sniffs and it's two goals, and that gets United the point. So it's to answer your question, it's really difficult to know what you're going to get from United at the weekend.
Jarbo, do you know the thing that I noticed immediately in that game against Atlanta, the team sheet, Cavani wasn't playing, right? And honestly, I think Cavani is the trigger for a good Man United performance, because his attitude, the way that he runs and covers any space, chases lost causes, but the players behind him see that he's doing it, and it triggers them to go and be more active in the game. And you go to Atlanta and there wasn't that. You can look at Ronaldo, who is trying harder, but he's never going to be the do what Cavani does, which is absolutely burst a gut to win the ball back. And I think it's that's what Man United need at this moment in time, is people that they can see that can drive their performance, you know. And I look at Pogba. He's still wanting to look like the best footballer in the world, and he's not prepared to put in the hard graft and the dirty side of the game. And you can't, it's Champions League, you can't carry players who are going to contribute here and there, albeit maybe well in some instances, but it's not enough.
Totally agree with you. I think you're spot on with Cavani. I almost feel sorry for him a little bit, because you look at United's performances last season and how they turned it around and how they finished, and he was instrumental in that. You know, his goals, his consistent performance, his hold up play, his runs, and like you said, like his professionalism around the club. I think that had a huge part to play. And we don't know whether Ronaldo was definitely on the short list to be signed in the summer anyway. But Ronaldo's top professional, but Cavani's just had that consistent where he was playing week in, week out. You knew what you were going to get, like you said, with his trait chasing, you know, pressing, everything about it, and everyone sort of just followed suit with him. Whereas it's just slightly different with Ronaldo. But I totally agree. If Cavani plays against City, United have a better chance.
I think Solskjaer said something interesting about Cavani as well in the build-up to that Champions League game. He said that one of the training sessions last week was the best training session he's ever seen from any player at the club since he's been there, and that came from a 34-year-old Cavani. So in terms of leading by example, he definitely does that, I think, both on and off.
And he didn't play.
Yeah, and he didn't play. I mean, what's that all about?
Well, one thing I noticed about Cavani, and I don't know if you boys have noticed this either, is he very rarely takes more than three touches to do what he needs to do, whether that's hold the ball up and pop it off, or, you know, pick the ball up from deep, or even take a touch and finish. Like his goal against Spurs was one touch across the defender and he dinks it over the keeper. He's never elaborate with his touches. He's just so conservative with the touches. He always makes sure that he does exactly what he needs to do. But certainly when it comes to Manchester United, we can talk about systems. Are they going to go back to a back four, do you think, Trevor? Because Varane, he's going to be injured now for a month. He'll miss the derby. He came off against Atalanta with an injury. And when that happened, Solskjaer changed straight from the back three system to a back four, which is what we're more used to seeing with United. Do you think he'll revert back to the three at the back again against City? Or do you think he'll revert to type, so to speak, against City and go back to the 4-3-2-1?
That's a difficult one. Because it's Man City particularly, he might think that a back four and getting two banks of four and trying just to close things down, not try and press the ball so much. He might be tempted to go to the back four, but the better performances come with letting Luke Shaw and Wan-Bissaka go further up the pitch. And if you play a back three, then that's what you've got. You've got that possibility. And I think if you look again at the performances, that Wan-Bissaka has had his best two games in the last couple of games for Man United in an aggressive, forward-thinking, quick usage of the ball than I've seen from him in the past. And that back three allows him to get into those more aggressive positions on the field. We know he's a great tackler, and then in the back four, yeah, probably defensively one of the best right backs there is in the Premier League. But it's a tough decision for Ollie. Does he go for it and try and press City, which he can do if he's clever with the back three and allow Bissaka and Shaw to get forward, get the players three in midfield, so make it really busy in there, and it could actually decide the game. That just the way that he sets up.
He's probably second guessing what Pep's going to do, because they don't really play with a striker. So then he's got three defenders potentially with no one to mark. So it's all a bit of guesswork and seeing what he thinks that Pep's going to do, to then whether to decide what system he should play. But who would be the other centre half? Because Bailey was great against Atalanta, but that's his first sort of proper game for a while. Can he play? Is Lindelof fit? Does he trust to play them three together? I don't know.
And Harry Maguire's not playing well.
No.
He was good against Tottenham, but just like an acceptable Harry Maguire performance, not super outstanding. But he seems a little bit indecisive about his defending. and against Man City, that could be a real problem. But you, if you do look at that, as you're saying, if you've got those three centre backs, who would be the one who's going to go into midfield and you know, in current form? Probably nobody. Varane can do that. He's got that capacity to nudge forward and go into space. The others, I don't think. I see them more as standing there, patrolling kind of back three, which might not fit, as you said, because City are not playing that out-and-out strike force. That could lead to confusion. So it's a difficult one. I wouldn't like to be in Ollie's shoes, to be honest.
Yeah, it really is tough, because even if they go a bit left field and put Scott McTominay there, who can step into midfield, he plays centre-half for Scotland. I think when you're playing three at the back, I agree with Jarvo. It's, you know, is Lindelof fit? Maguire's in poor form. Varane is out. Twanzebe's on loan at Aston Villa. Phil Jones is injured. So actually, if you're playing three centre-halves, what backup have you got? You look at the bench against Atalanta, nine subs you can use in the Champions League, or you can bring nine subs. There were no central defenders on the bench. So it's almost like you have to put Luke Shaw in there, or you have to put Matic in there, or McTominay in there. So I do think with that back three system, there are positives and negatives as we've gone over. Just finally on United then, before we move on to City. If United lose handsomely, like they did against Liverpool, which is not out of the question, what do you think that means for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer moving forward?
I think United will back him. I don't see them, you know, I think obviously that there was rumblings, I assume, after the Liverpool game and Conte was, you know, was brought up and everything, but he's gone now. You know, so they've sort of missed the boat on that. So now they've backed him with that. They've probably got to, you know, back him the whole way again now, and give him the season. But it will be a very interesting to see the performance and to see the result, because if they do lose, I mean, there's been so many question marks about him so far, tactically, you know, results based. And if they lose again, it's, I just think he starts losing the respect of potential players. I think I saw that someone was saying that he was asking when in the defeat that, sorry, in Atalanta, once Varane came off, he was asking Ronaldo what he should do formation-wise. I mean, that can't be right.
I almost feel like he can get away with a sort of poor performance against Man City, as long as it's not 5-0, but it could be a 3-0 easy. I think the Man United board can ride with that. I think it's particularly when Man United go and play one of the sort of bottom 10 clubs, let's say, and there's a really poor showing. That has almost become more unacceptable to the fan base, where they should be dominating some games and some teams. So I'm not saying this is not a free hit this weekend by any stretch of the imagination, but it probably won't have as significant ripple as you might know play against Palace and lose against Palace this weekend. That would be really, really a sucker punch for the management team.
Yeah, I've said this a few times in the build-up to this game. I wouldn't be surprised if City went and won this, like you say, Trevor, 3-0 or something. But by the same token, I also wouldn't be surprised if United pull it out the bag and win and beat City, because they've got the players and the quality to do it. It's just putting those pieces of the puzzle together and getting it to happen in a fluid fashion. But enough about United. Let's talk about Manchester City. And I wanted to ask you, Trevor, about Pep Guardiola, particularly some of the comments he made. He said before the Club Brugge game in the Champions League midweek that that match was more important than this Manchester derby. I disagree, and I can understand why these sorts of comments annoy the fans, but his point was that the Premier League is a marathon, not a sprint, and there are still just 3 points on offer at the end of the day against United, regardless of whether they win. But with the displays that Manchester United have had in recent weeks, do you think from a City fan perspective, they'll be extra keen for their side to take full advantage? Or do you think it won't quite be as easy as that?
Right. If you're a fan, I think you were a Man United fan. The local derby is right out there as the bragging rights for the year, isn't it, really? So it does have a lot of significance. But if you look at the other side of it, and Man City fans must look at themselves as well, they do want to win the Champions League. Their fans want to win it. But I'd probably say, in fairness, that Man City would prefer to win the Premier League, I believe, really, than the Champions League. So there's a bit of a black hole there in my argument. It's difficult to say either way. But I, and it could be lost in translation again, you know, with Pep speaking in English. that he's emphasising something that he didn't mean to emphasise as much as maybe came across. But it is still, you know, very much of a knockout competition, the Champions League, because you don't get that many cracks at the whip, even in the group stages. So they are very vital games, and they do mean something in the here and now. Whereas what he's saying is, you know, even if we've got get beat off Man United, we're going to have opportunities to recover from that. Whereas in the Champions League, you can actually suffer a couple of blows and be out of it. So I get his mentality. I get the other way as well from City fans. I think you probably have to ask 100 City fans, you know, you'd get a mixture of answers on that.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's one of those where they really want to stick the knife into Manchester United while they're down. It feels like that, Java. I don't know how you see it.
Yeah, 100%. Of course you would. Any fan would be that. But I think if the games were the opposite way around and you asked him the question, he would say the Manchester derby is the most important because it's the next game. He has to say that. So, you know, you're going into the Champions League. I think, Trevor, what you said to start with, I think Pep is desperate to. He's got a lot of pressure on him to do well in the Champions League. You know, he's won everything else, you know, for City, and they are desperate to win that Champions League. So he's got a lot of pressure on him to do well in that competition. So, of course, he's going to say that one is the most important because that is the next game. Once that's out of the way, what's next? The next game is against Man United. That is the most important. Every manager says that. It's the next game. But he had to do well in that Champions League game because of the pressure from above. So now, moving on, City fans will be desperate to, you know, to get a great result against United and have that bragging rights, because they want to win every game, and the fans now expect that as well.
Well, it's not just bragging rights, Jarvo. They lost last week to Crystal Palace, which was a surprise. No one expected that. So I guess it's not just about beating Manchester United and getting bragging rights in Manchester. It's about keeping pace with those at the top, because, you know, Liverpool and Chelsea are currently the top two, and City probably don't want to be falling any further behind.
No, you're spot on. They can't afford to lose many more games in the league, because you look at Liverpool and Chelsea, and that their size, that you don't necessarily see them dropping too many points. So they can't get too far behind. And as you say, you know, it's great to win against United, but ultimately for them, they need to keep pace with the leaders.
Yeah, 100%. Should be a fascinating Manchester derby this Saturday, 12:30 PM kickoff at Old Trafford as United take on City. Time to talk about Everton against Tottenham now, which for me is another exciting game in our list of fixtures this weekend in the top flight. 2 o'clock kickoff Sunday at Goodison Park. And Tottenham begin their Premier League life under Antonio Conte. We often see with new managers when they come in, Trevor, an immediate upturn in form. Are you expecting that here against Everton, do you think?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, he's going to sort of be a tornado around that training ground, through the buildings of at Tottenham Hotspur. They're going to know he's there from the first instant, and there has to be a reaction. There will be a reaction, and I'm very concerned that they're going to Goodison for that first game, because. Now, Everton are really struggling at this moment in time. But as far as Conte is concerned, and his quality of management, you just cannot argue it. He's got a particular style. I think he's a bit like Tuchel as well. You know, at Chelsea, he's pretty brutal. You know, and I think Tuchel's very much like that as well. Doesn't suffer fools. Insists that his messages are adopted. And Antonio Conte will expect, having had two or three days with these players leading up to this game, that they've got the message, and what's not acceptable to him. And we know what that is. It's just work rate, effort, enthusiasm for the game, enjoyment in the game. You need all of that. Well, we've not seen that from Tottenham. But I just think the club has changed dramatically with the appointment of Conte. With all due respect to Nuno, you've got bigger personalities on the field than you have off it as your leader. Now that has changed, that dynamic has changed. So Conte is now what everybody sees as Tottenham. It's no longer Harry Kane. Right? Harry Kane, get back into the ranks and let's get on with business. And it's Antonio Conte who's leading that. And I think that will happen very, very quickly. I hope it doesn't quite happen for this weekend, because I'm an Evertonian. But I fear that it will be a reinvigorated Tottenham Hotspur. Therefore, you know, Rafa's got to work some magic somehow, and I've not seen a lot of magic at Goodison apart from the first two or three weeks of the season.
We'll talk about Everton in a bit more detail in a second, but you mentioned Harry Kane there, Trevor. What do you think, Jarvo, when it comes to Harry Kane? Do you think Conte will get him firing again, or do the issues with his form run a little bit deeper than just who is the manager? We all highlight the failed move to Man City in the summer as a possible reason as to why he's perhaps not at his best at the moment.
100% he'll be back flying. Conte, as Trevor has said it, he's the captain of the ship, and he is the boss. Everything goes through him. The whole feeling around Tottenham Hotspur, the fans, everyone is absolutely delighted with this appointment. And it's one that they probably wanted, you know, eight managers, yeah. You know, or, you know, when he was first on their shortlist, he was probably the one. And the enthusiasm that he brings off, and he's not afraid, you know, he'll have a falling out with Harry Kane if he doesn't put his weight. He'll have a falling out because he is the boss. You know, it doesn't, you know, there's no other way around it. He's going to get the best out of everyone. And if you're not following his plan, you're out. And, you know, Kane will want to work for him because he will be able to bring success to Spurs. I'm not saying they're going to win trophies and win the league, but he will definitely make an impact at Tottenham. And you can even see from, like, you know, John Terry put out saying, and didn't want to say it, but it's an amazing appointment. But, you know, get ready to work. And if people like Dele Alli, you know, that haven't really been getting a chance, and people have been questioning his work rate in training and that, if he doesn't, he's not going to be there at all. You know, he will be out. So I think it's a great appointment for Spurs. They're going to get that enjoyment factor back from the fans. Everyone's expectation levels have gone up, and I think players will be buzzing off it, because there's going to be that discipline around the training ground. There's going to be that energy. You're going to have to train well. You're going to have to perform well. And I feel like if you train well, you'll play, rather than people have their sort of teams and shapes and system. If you're not playing well, training well, you're not going to play. And that's just the way he is.
Do you know what I think? Do you know what I think? The thing about Conte is everybody's sort of thinking about him at Chelsea and what he did at Chelsea, and he was obviously successful. This guy won Serie A 4 months ago. Mm. Right?
After Juventus won it 9 years in a row, Trevor, as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Right. And also he's got Lukaku looking like the world beater that he has become, someone who can score against anyone and score lots of goals. So that's what Daniel Levy will hope is going to happen to Harry Kane and have the Conte effect. But his success is very, very recent as well. Must not forget that about Conte.
Yeah, 100%. He's ruthless, isn't he? And I really like what you said, Trevor, about him being a tornado coming through the club and just taking out anyone that doesn't pull their weight. I don't think he's got any issues with doing that. And Harry Kane falls into that category, regardless of how good a goal scorer he is. If he's not doing it, he won't play. I think, Jarvo, you're spot on when it comes to that. Time to talk Everton then, Trevor. One of your former clubs. You had great success there as a player. Obviously, the key, I think, for Rafa Benitez and the club now is to kind of re-establish themselves as one of the bigger players in the Premier League. Benitez was a welcomed appointment by many people, just in terms of he's the best man for the job at the time. He was met with a bit of criticism by some sections of the fan base, and it started off really well for them this season in the Premier League. However, since then, they've now lost their last three in a row, most recently to Wolves on Monday night. How concerning is that recent form? Because they've conceded 8 goals in 3 games, which is not something you'd usually associate with a Rafa side.
It's a difficult one. Start of the season, and we say it every year, that, you know, you can get your form is not really indicative as how you're going to survive the marathon of the Premier League. And Everton, as what has come to bear in the last 2 or 3 weeks, is how bare that squad is for a start. And what is the actual quality of the players? And the players is just a good Premier League standard, and no more than that. But then when you've got, you're missing someone like Doucouré, for instance, who has come in and done brilliantly. He's physical. He's started to get forward. He's been held back in the past by Ancelotti and previous management. He's now been able to express himself in the way that he can. And that's been a really good trigger for other players. And the acquisitions of Townsend and Damari Gray have worked extremely well, although it's faded. But everybody's just come down a level. And Doucouré being out, it looks disjointed. It's not pleasing on the eye. Richarlison runs around. He's been back in the team, you know, a little bit. He does give effort, but I just think he's a bit of a headless chicken at sometimes, and Everton fans might not appreciate me saying that. I don't think he links in with teams brilliantly, but he is obviously a very good player. He plays for Brazil, for goodness sake, right? But you've got Calvert-Lewin, who's not even featured. And that Everton's squad is too thin to not feel the ups and downs and bumps of what that's going to, you know, the kind of effect that that's going to have. So I'm fearful for what is going to take place, you know, taking into consideration the Conte effect at Tottenham.
Yeah, I think you're right as well when it comes to Everton going forward. I mean, Dominic Calvert-Lewin was one of the better strikers in the Premier League for me last season. They've obviously missed him. And at the start of the season, Andros Townsend was taking on the mantle scoring goals. I think he was top scorer in the league for a bit with 5 in 3 games or something. But that was never going to last, was it? So I think it's certainly to get Dominic Calvert-Lewin back sooner rather than later will be a real benefit to Everton, who welcomed Tottenham Hotspur and Antonio Conte on Sunday. Time to talk about another game that takes place on Sunday. This time, the other half of the City, Liverpool, the red half, they travel to your old club, West Ham. Jarvo, and in David Moyes, 1,000 games in management. The Genk game in the Europa League is number 1,000 for him. I asked this question earlier this week, but it'd be interesting to get a perspective from someone like yourself who's played for the club and played the game at the highest level. How do you assess his career as a manager?
I think he's done very, very, very well. I think, you know, people, you look at, you say he's had a few, you know, disappointments, but if you ask him and you talk about David Moyes, all they necessarily, for me, go straight to Everton and what a successful period he had there with the squad of players that he continuously brought through and changed and adapted and his style of play. And I think he's just done exactly the same, but at West Ham. And I actually feel like he's now got a better squad as well at West Ham in right now at the moment. That the players that it's the same sort of system. He's got the same sort of spine as of the team is the same. And what he's done at West Ham in his second spell, yes, but it's been remarkable. He's gone from at the end of last season where they were, you know, I say struggling to survive. They weren't. They were having a poor end to the season, and he got them through. In lockdown. And then last year, he's got rid of what he would say class as a dead wood or people that weren't sort of following his system and the way he wanted to play. And he's made some very shrewd signings. And then he's just got them playing with confidence. And it's consistent. That's what the biggest thing in football is consistency. And he's got that now. And he's got a centre forward in Antonio who can give anyone on their day, he can run in behind him, he can bully them, he can score goals. And the rest of the squad is all playing on confidence and on a high. And they're riding that wave. And they've just continuously done that now for the back end of last season, all into this season. And he's made a great appointment for West Ham. And they're only looking up. And they'll probably be looking at this game now going, yeah, we can get something from this game. I don't feel like they're fearing any team at all at the moment. You look at that from the Europa League performances as well.
You know, what Matt says there is absolutely true, because he is replicating that period that he had at Everton, which was very stable. 10 years he had there and kept a consistency about the club and about, you know, their achievements, got into the Champions League, I think one season. So he's doing the same at West Ham. And of course, he was invited to go back to West Ham, having done a pretty decent job in his first time that he was appointed there. And so he goes back. He's a bit more mature. He's been to Man United. He's got thick skin. He's very, very clued up on how the, you know, Premier League football clubs work. So he's perfect for the role, absolutely perfect for it. And I was delighted he was given that second opportunity. He's got a really good group of people around him. He's got Stuart Pearce, he's got Alan Irvine, he's got, Steve Round is there as well? I think so. Maybe not Steve Round, I can't remember who his first team coach is. But it's a really good, strong setup. And he's actually got someone like me having a soft spot for West Ham. and actually enjoying the voyage that they're on at this moment in time. So, and that all comes down to David's strong, clear attitude. And again, the recruitment, the Czech lads, particularly Suchek, Kufal, guys who are internationals, regular level of performance. Declan Rice has just become, you know, on that world stage now, as a leader. He's such a young man, and he's taking it on. It just flicks it off his shoulder. It's nothing. And the performances he's putting in are absolutely magnificent. So it's just a happy place to be, you know, and it's good for a club like that, of that stature, to be back up there mixing it and having a voice at that end of the table for a change. So I'm really pleased for them.
Yeah, definitely. And Billy McKinley is the assistant manager, by the way.
Billy McKinley,
and Jarvo's old mate, Kevin Nolan, is also a coach. And so is Psycho Stuart Pearce as well. So they've got some characters behind the scenes there at West Ham, that's for sure. Let's talk about Liverpool just quickly then before we go to a quick break. They look in fine form at the moment, don't they? They beat Atletico Madrid with a clean sheet midweek in the Champions League. Fabinho, Thiago, both back fit. It's going to be a tough game for Liverpool, as you've already said, Jarvo, against West Ham. But they know, particularly with Chelsea playing a beleaguered Burnley this weekend, they'll most likely need to beat West Ham just to keep pace with Chelsea at the top of the table.
Yeah, they will. They'll go into the game knowing full well that they need to get a win. Don't get me wrong, you know, a draw would be, I suppose, you know, not a bad result in the grand scheme of things, but they'll be confident. You know, look at the performances they've grown in, bar, you know, Brighton, where they, you know, maybe should have got the 3 points that they wanted, but they are in confident spirits. They're going away, Champions League, you know, that's not an easy game. You know, to go and, you know, then to beat Atletico is a very good result, and they've done it with ease. You know, they're just confident that all of their star players are playing well. You know, Salah's playing well. You've got, like you said, Firmino's back, but Jota's scoring goals, Mane's scoring goals. You've got Trent back to his brilliant best of, you know, the assists that he brings in, his ability to find a pass. And everything's just starting to get back to where it was for Liverpool. You know, Van Dijk's back fit, huge, huge importance. And they've got a bit more of a settled side. And then when they do make changes, the players that they're bringing in are top quality. You know, that's the difference. And it's not like when they have to make a change because they've got Champions League to the Premier League, they're bringing in someone that they're not really that sure about. They're bringing in someone that's played, you know, at least 50 internationals. You know, they are really, really top players. So they're in great spirits, and they'll go there with, you know, full of confidence to go and get a win. But it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, you're right. They look fearsome at the moment as well. And I think it speaks volumes that there's not really a huge amount of discussion points around Liverpool at the moment. You know, we're not talking about injuries. We're not talking about glitches in form. We're talking about a team that do look very, very good and will be a tough test for the Hammers, that's for sure. Sunday, 4:30 kickoff. Right, time for a quick break. And afterwards, we'll be talking about one of Trevor's former clubs, Burnley, as they make the trip to West London to play Chelsea. We'll do it after this.
The Dugout Premier League Preview. Football Social Daily. The Dugout Premier League Preview. Football Social Daily.
Welcome back to The Dugout. This is the Premier League preview show from Sports Social. I'm Niall. Former Premier League players Matt Jarvis and Trevor Stephen are alongside me, and we're going to discuss Chelsea against Burnley now, which is a 3 o'clock kickoff on Saturday. Huge monkey off the back for Sean Dyche last week, Trevor, beating Brentford 3-1. Massive result. It also felt crucial because Newcastle were playing Chelsea. This week, the Clarets face Chelsea. Do you think maybe there'll be a slight renewed confidence after that Brentford win? Because we can't understate just how important that 3 points was.
Yeah, huge result for Burnley, obviously. I've seen Burnley a couple of times at the start of the season. I was at the Everton game where they actually were better than Everton, although Everton ran out 3-1. They've got a really good consistency of and a way of playing that they all understand, first and foremost. And Turf Moor was really a difficult place for clubs to go to, and they'd built that over a few years, but begun to lose that impact of teams going there. There were teams starting to get used to it, how Burnley play and working their way around it. But this result brings them right back, and they are a little bit more, let's say, forward-thinking than they have been in recent seasons. A bit more confidence about themselves going forward. Of course, they have paid the price for that a couple of times this season already. But I just felt that this was the one that they had to win. So it was a, you know, it was a 9-pointer, if you like, for them to win this, because the crowd start believing again. Sean Dyche is, although he's never really ruffled, I'm sure there was a little bit of a nervousness about him approaching that game. And of course, you know, and that's probably why it happened, is because for my fantasy football league team, I had Chris Woods in it and Maxwell Coney, and I took them out. I took them out on the morning of the game, and so it's all down to me, really, you know. But they've got the goal, you know, they're back. I don't think Burnley will be, you know, over the season. They know how to get through that, you know, the duration. But that result really sort of kickstarts the season for them.
How good's Cornet been, Trevor? Apart from before you took him out your team, obviously.
No, he's been really good. He's a bit of an unknown quantity, but he's forward thinking. He gets into goal scoring positions, so people don't know him yet. You know, so you might get found out. But for the moment, he is creating he's disturbing back fours, and there's not often you've been able to say that about a Burnley side.
I was just about to say he's just perfect for what Burnley needed, because they've not really had that sort of player, and he's just exactly what they needed.
Yeah, he's different, isn't it? It's not what you would normally get from a Burnley 11. So it's good.
It's like when Saint-Maximin went to Newcastle. It's similar to that, isn't it? It's just someone to just do something, a spark.
Yeah, but the thing with Saint-Maximin is that yes, he's given that spark, but the quality around him is. Then Newcastle United don't even play at the level that Burnley are playing at, you know, as a team. So there's quite a good base for Maxwell Coney to go and do something from. I feel like Saint-Maximin needs to make it up all on his own, you know, and there's not a lot of support around him. So I think it's a really good environment at Burnley, but, you know, to be honest, Chelsea, they're just looking like one of those teams that are going to be on form all the way through. You can't see them losing form.
Yeah, I know what you mean. They beat Malmo 1-0 midweek in the Champions League. They dominated, and that was without Lukaku and Werner. You'd argue that they should be too strong for Burnley, but 3 points in it at both ends of the table. Chelsea 3 points clear at the top from Liverpool in second. Burnley 3 points from safety. Leeds United in 17th, Burnley in 18th. We'll come on to Newcastle shortly. They're on 4 points and already 6 points from safety and still without a manager. Crystal Palace versus Wolves is the game we'll discuss next. Another 3 o'clock Saturday start. Big wins for both sides in their previous Premier League games. Palace, though, with a surprising but well-deserved win at Man City, which we've already discussed, Jarvo, after the abundance of draws they've had this season, where we've seen them concede late goals but play well in the process, we said that surely at some point it was going to swing one way or another, and it did. It swung towards a big win, a huge win against Manchester City. How important is it, though, when you get big wins like that as a squad and as a group, that you don't get caught up in that result and get ahead of yourself? They need to firmly put that behind them now, don't they? As good as that result against City was, and just focus on this game.
Definitely. There's nothing worse than having a result like that and then going and losing your next game. The big thing with the City is it's a free hit. You know, you're going there not expected to get anything. So when you go and win, your next game is against Wolves, who are, you know, in and around where you are in the league. It's a game that you want to get points from. So you know, if they lost against Man City and beat Wolves, would everyone be like, oh, you know, they're doing okay? If they beat Man City and lose to Wolves, it's gonna be like, oh, what are they doing? You know, it's just you've got their City games are free hit. They've gone there, they've got a fantastic result. Now they've got to back it up with the next one, which is against Wolves, but it's never going to be as easy as you make it out to be.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that these sorts of games are ones that can kind of creep up on you. I think Wolves have looked a lot better as well in recent weeks, starting to get the results to back up the performances. You know, against an Everton team who did make it easy for them at times in that game on Monday, Trevor, they capitalised on a mistake. They scored from a set piece. Did you see enough from Wolves to think that they might be all right this season in terms of just sticking around that mid-table, or is there anything to suggest that they can get any further than that?
I did see a lot of positives. They were aggressive going forward. Everton couldn't live with it. They didn't work hard enough, and maybe Everton made them look a little bit better than they are, but you still got to do it. And I thought Wolves were clear winners in that game. They deserved the 3 points. And of course, it's a great building block, isn't it, for them to go forward? Because Wolves would look at the Crystal Palace game, setting the Man City, Crystal Palace win at Man City aside, which is almost like an FA Cup game, isn't it? It's like just a Palace can go in there without any pressure. This is what Wolves would fancy themselves at Palace to go and get at least a draw and to maybe win that one. But Vieira's got Palace looking like a different animal. In truth, I've seen them. They should have won at Arsenal. That they played really, really well at Arsenal. He's been quite clever with his use of his subs as well. He's got Ayew back. He's got Zaha back. Edouard Oudson. I really like him sitting out there on the left hand side. Benteke looks revived, albeit he can still miss an open goal but score a classic. They've got a lot of things going on at Palace, but what the key thing is, they've got a Vieira who's striding around that dressing room, and who's going to like ignore Patrick Vieira for what he's done in the game? And I'm glad he's made an impact. And Palace at Selhurst Park, I think, is always an attractive game for any team to go to. And because of that victory last week at Man City, I would expect Palace to win this one with home advantage, because this game will be far more difficult for Wolves than the Everton challenge.
Yeah, I think some of their midfield play has been really good as well. Conor Gallagher's caught my eye this season. Oh, I think he's been brilliant, great. Absolutely brilliant. Also, a bit of Palace news you might have seen in some of the reports. Sol Campbell is actually going to do some work with Patrick Vieira behind the scenes at Palace as he hunts for his next managerial job. You can read more on that story on the website, sport-social.co.uk. But Crystal Palace welcome Wolves to Selhurst Park this weekend. The evening kickoff on Saturday starts at 5:30 and it takes place on the south coast. The Amex Stadium is the venue, and Newcastle United are the visitors, and they're visiting still without a new manager, Jarvo. Unai Emery rejected Newcastle's approaches midweek. He says he's 100% committed to the Villarreal job, reports suggesting that the lack of a clear plan from the powers that be, the new powers that be at Newcastle, was one of the reasons why he rejected them. Eddie Howe is once again back in the frame, allegedly. Are you surprised it's taken this long for them to replace Steve Bruce? Because it's been, 2 weeks now since Steve Bruce was given his marching orders, and they might well head into this next international break still without his replacement.
Look, I am. I am and I'm not, because I think that as soon as they took over, everyone, you knew that Steve Bruce wasn't going to be there. They waited a couple of days and then he was gone. But they never had a plan of who they were going to get. They just knew that they didn't want Steve Bruce. So then it takes, you have to have a process of who do you think. They've probably thrown out a few names. They've spoken to them. And like Emery, they might not have a plan of looking and seeing the stepping stones of how Newcastle are going to develop over the short term, let alone the long term, but the short term, because they're in a terrible situation at the moment. And they need to stay up in the Premier League this season to make any of this worthwhile. So this appointment is huge, and they have to have the right person. But do they delay any longer? I think the longer they delay, the worse it's going to be, because they need someone to go in and take charge at the moment. At the moment, they've still got the same players, the same sort of people that are taking charge. They've all been there a while. They need someone to come in fresh. And like Conte, we'll go ruffle a few feathers and try and get the best out of everyone. They need to do it quickly, but it's got to be right.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the majority of Steve Bruce's coaching staff are still there working behind the scenes, I think, from what I understand. And you're right. They're 6 points from safety, and they've still got the same group at least for another 2 months before they can dip into the market in January. Do you think it was a case when it comes to that Steve Bruce sacking, Trevor, that it was almost they had to be seen to do something? The fervour was so great, and everyone was so buzzing about this new ownership coming in and taking over from Mike Ashley. It almost felt like they had to do something, otherwise it would have been a bit of an anti-climax, I guess.
Yeah, Newcastle's such a big club. I'm from the northeast. Matt's from the northeast, right? We know what kind of club that is, right? We know that kind of club. It's if you get it right there, you're legendary status. But I think it's staring me in the face exactly what they should be doing, right? They've had that many knockbacks, they might have to ask Steve Bruce to come back. It's almost getting to that stage, right? So Frank Lampard, to me, is a shoo-in for that job, right? An absolute shoo-in. because he's managed. Remember, he had a brilliant season at Chelsea, all right, in the Premier League. Okay, I know there was all sorts of restrictions, but he did. He had a few months in the new season, and of course Tuchel comes over because Chelsea hadn't quite got to the standard where Chelsea were or wanted to be from up above, from Abramovich. Okay, so that happened. But he was at Derby County in the Championship and got them into the playoffs. He's actually perfect for that Newcastle United job. It's a big club that he can go and do something with. I don't think any manager can go in there now, and I don't care who you are, and turn that around before the January transfer window. They don't have the capacity because they haven't got the good enough players to do it. They can only, all they can be is hard to beat and maybe scrounge a few points and be prepared for relegation. Right, just put it in your mind that this could be a relegation season, but don't hump that on the manager that comes in. Know that he's, believe in him and let him do, you know, whatever they can between now and then. And of course, spend money. Frank spent money at Chelsea. He knows what that feels like. No, Eddie Howe's never spent money. If he comes in, for instance, I just think he's ready made. I think he's, you know, on the shelf. Get him in. He's been out, you know, a year almost, and he's got Jody Morris, and he's got his own sort of setup that could get straight in there. And it surprises me that they've not made a bigger effort to go for him. If it was me that was in charge at Newcastle, I would go and get him in because he's unattached. There's no complications. And what other job is he actually going to get that's going to fulfill what he could potentially do as a manager? It's just Newcastle United for me.
I would not be surprised. I know I'm just going to throw this. I would not be surprised to see Rafa Benitez back there.
Yeah, I mean, that has been murmured, but it's going on so awkwardly at Everton, you know, for him.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's sort of a get out of jail free card for him.
But I think that we discussed this on the podcast earlier this week, Jarvo, and it was almost as if the takeover took those involved by surprise, because there was supposed to be a court case in January, and all of a sudden the Saudis and the Qataris sort out their piracy issue, and it's right, we've paved the way, green light to the takeover. And it's almost like it's caught them on the hop. And if they had known that, for instance, mid-October they'd get a takeover deal done, they might have just been able to say to Rafa in the summer, just hold tight and we'll get you back and we'll pay you well. But obviously it didn't work out like that. No one knew what exactly was going to happen. I think it's really an interesting chat to be had about Newcastle and how things are working up there in the northeast. Brighton against Newcastle, 5:30 Saturday. Time for another break here on The Dugout. Still three more games to discuss. We'll do it next.
The Dugout, Premier League preview, Football Social Daily. The Dugout, Premier League preview, Football Social Daily.
Welcome back to the podcast. Niall here with you on today's edition of The Dugout. Matt Jarvis, Trevor Stephen are with me. Arsenal against Watford is a Sunday kickoff, 2 o'clock this weekend in the Premier League. Claudio Ranieri's gone into Watford and he's picked up a couple of results. The Emirates is a tough place to go. Arsenal have picked up in form recently as well. They've gone level with Manchester United on points in sixth place. They're quietly going about their business, which I don't think Arteta will mind too much. Do you think that Ranieri can pick up another sneaky win against Arsenal, Jarvo?
No, I don't. I think, you know, Arteta, for everything that he's had against him, you know, and it's been a lot, I think he will be delighted of how they've just crept under the radar and they've just been getting results. You know, it's not been like 4-5-0 wins and everyone's happy. It's been good 1-0s, 2-1, you know, just getting them wins, and that gets momentum going, that breeds confidence. And you're looking at the players that are playing as well. Smith Rowe's come in, he's doing well. You know, Saka, all these young players that are actually playing and doing well and winning games, it's only going to benefit them for the rest of the season. And, you know, Ranieri's what a character he is, and everyone loves him. And he has got results where you wouldn't expect it. But I just can't see it against Arsenal this weekend.
Arsenal haven't lost since the 28th of August, which took me by surprise, Trevor. That's in all competitions as well.
Yeah, but they've only actually had, you know, better form. They've had some, you know, got the results, you know, but not on good performances there, but their form has completely changed. And what I've noticed is, again, going back to how we started the show, it's about work rate with Cavani. It's now about work rate with Aubameyang and Lacazette, right, who are starting to take responsibility for how do we play when we don't have the ball? All of a sudden they're interested in that. And it's taken a while for that penny to fall. But they've got it now, and they can see again that they are inspiring the guys with them or giving them the confidence to go into areas on the field where they can actually press. And that has improved dramatically with Arsenal, because they have got some great talent and they have got players who can score goals. So if you can create, you can win the ball back further up the field. You're going to put pressure on teams. But I would like to say, you know, there are a couple of other things that are outstanding, I think, for Arsenal. Is the goalkeeper, well, we saw his world-class save last weekend. He has got a freshness of attitude and self-belief and confidence and pulling off some amazing saves. Distribution, incredible. He's on the top of his form, which is always a great start if you've got a goalkeeper who's doing extremely well. But what I really do like about Arsenal is this relationship that's developing between Ben White and Gabriel as centre-backs. They have started to look like they absolutely understand each other's game, and the commitment. I think there was a bit of action last week where the pair of them were diving into to block a shot on goal, and they almost sort of went across each other. They had all the goal covered between them. There's just that mentality, you know, thou shalt not pass kind of attitude, which has been a bit flimsy in the past, in the recent past for Arsenal. Seems to be a harder, more impressive psyche, I think, around the club and around that team. And, you know, credit to Arteta for that. Just under a lot of pressure, stuck to his guns, and he's starting to bear the fruit.
Yeah, for sure. Arteta does deserve some credit, you're right. Arsenal welcome Watford to the Emirates, Sunday 2 o'clock, taking place at the same time on Sunday at Elland Road. Leeds United welcome Leicester City. Calvin Phillips returned for Leeds last week, and they won, Jarvo. The stats suggest that that's no coincidence as well, as all the numbers read that they're a much better team when he plays. First of all, is that a surprise? And secondly, would you agree that he is one of the most important components to Leeds United?
Yeah, no, I don't. It's not a surprise at all. He's integral to the way that they play. He bosses that midfield. The system that Leeds play, it's sort of like a 1v1 everywhere around the pitch. And when you're 1v1 at the back, you know, you've got to be a good defender. And that's where they're sort of, you know, getting caught out a little bit at the moment. People are working it out, but Calvin Phillips can be that extra player. He runs around the pitch. He's here, there, and everywhere. And he's got that influence on everyone. I actually watched the game against Norwich, and he didn't have his best game in possession. He wasn't quite at the races, but it just shows how important he is for the team. You know, they can see him on the pitch. He's a leader. He just drives the team forward.
He's inspirational for that 11, isn't he? And he leads by example. He's not particularly vocal in how he goes about his sort of leadership. It's what he does. It's his actions. And again, everybody around him, you know, reacts to that, which Leeds have sorely missed. They've been a bit of an easy touch, but with Phillips back in, there's a, you know, given that sturdiness about their performances.
I couldn't agree more with what you just said there, Trevor. It's almost as if the lads in the dressing room think, right, we've got Calv back today. We're going to be a bit more solid. We can all play a little bit better. And it isn't, oh, you know, the general's coming into the changing room. It's more of a, like a kind of a relaxed feel, a relaxed vibe, almost like a bit of comfort, I guess, for the other players to know that they've got someone of that quality in and around them who can make them better. As for Leicester, frustration when it comes to their consistency, Trevor, I think. The last 12 games in all competitions, 4 wins, 4 draws, 4 defeats. You know, it's, you can't get more level than that across the board, and they're 11th in the Premier League table to show for that. When are they going to start clicking and start hitting some form in terms of picking up wins on a more regular basis, do you think?
Well, I think they've fallen into this little bit of a trap that you can fall into if you're not careful. Is that they've become more of a reactive team than a proactive. They've waited to get into games a little bit, and by the time that's happened, they've been a goal down or they find themselves under pressure. And it was very much like that against Arsenal last week. Arsenal were on the front foot very early on, and there was confusion in that Leicester team. And, you know, this is a team that's played together, you know, a lot over the last couple of seasons, and had Brendan Rodgers there obviously steering that ship. But they looked a long way off. They looked disconnected and disjointed. And then they had to chase the game, and they started to look like Leicester of old and started to create a couple of opportunities. But it was a little bit too late. And then that you get to the end of the game, you've lost at home, and the confidence is down a little bit again. And, you know, Vardy's not scoring as often as he would like. That he had one or two opportunities in front of goal, pulls a header wide, pulls a half chance wide as well. We're used to seeing them score them. I think they'll be fine. I think they'll be absolutely fine, and they will get that. But I don't see them as being as formidable as Leicester were, I think, in the last couple of seasons. And they need to cure that. I think they have missed a couple of players at the back. I think Fofana is an excellent player that has added a lot of pace and aggressive and forward-thinking central defensive play, and inspirational as well. And so there's one or two reasons why they're maybe not on full form. They will come back, but not necessarily, I think, in this game. I think it's going to be a real tough one for them.
I was going to say, I think they've almost sort of, they've got a hangover from, you know, the last two seasons being in the top four the whole season, and that the last game of the season getting knocked out into fifth. It's going to grate on you, and they haven't really recovered from that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, I'm sure they will click into gear at some point, but at the moment they're in 11th, 14 points, which strangely, because of the way the Premier League season has gone, 3 points off of Manchester United and Arsenal in fifth and sixth. It's funny the way things are working when we're talking about a team that aren't very consistent. One team that are consistent, unfortunately for them, in the fact that they haven't exactly been as good as they want to be this season, is Norwich City. They travel to West London to play Brentford in a Saturday 3 o'clock kickoff. Your former side, Matt, Norwich City, they were the better team out of these two sides in the Championship and obviously won the league. Brentford have been the better side in the Premier League so far. In terms of a game that they would want to break their duck of not winning yet, is this one of the ones where you'd look at and you think, right, okay, boys, this is a game we can really go out and win? I'm sure they do every game want to win. Everyone does. But this one in particular, do you think that considering the two sides met last season in the Championship, they might fancy it a little bit more?
They have to. There's nothing else to say. It's the most important game for them. They have to win. You know, they've got to get something. They've got to start getting some sort of, you know, points together to start their season. You know, it's just a massive contrast from where I look at it and I think when they came up last time, no one gave them any sort of thing that they were going to stay up. They hardly spent any money. They had the same sort of team that came up from the Championship. They all played and everyone was like, oh, Norwich, aren't they great? What a great side. They play great football. And they got some really good results. They beat City. You know, they did really well. But ultimately, they couldn't stop the goals coming in. And they got relegated. This time, they've come up as champions, blew the Championship away. And they've changed. They've sort of got rid of a lot of players that potentially did a lot in the Championship. They've brought in quite a chunk of players. They've spent some money and not necessarily all these players that have actually played in the Premier League. And they're finding it difficult and they're still conceding the goals. And they're, you know, Pookie last time when they came up, he was flying, scoring goals. They're struggling to score goals and they're really struggling to keep them out. And realistically, is this a perfect game for them? Yes, it probably is, because they're playing against a team that they've, you know, played in the Championship, and it's a must-win game for them.
Yeah, every game's must-win at this stage already for them, isn't it, Trevor?
It is. It's looking, the writing's on the wall. I think Norwich need to look at themselves is that, you know, they're kind of doing this season what they were doing when they got relegated. The season before last. So you if you're going to be really honest but critical about it, I mean, what have you learned? What as a club, what have you learned? And Matt's absolutely right. He's brought in too many players without any real serious top level experience, and so you're going on a bit of a wing and a prayer as to how that might go. I just see that the style of football is maybe not what that squad is capable of. Maybe it needs to be adjusted. He's going to have to mess around with formations a little bit until he gets it right. What his biggest challenge for Daniel Farke is that he's got to keep that belief in the players. Listen, it's not over by a long stretch. right, let's just get a focus on the next game and let's see where we are by Christmas, and we're in this together, and just try and squeeze results out. But this one is going to be quite mentally tough for them to take if they don't get a result against Brentford, because they were better than Brentford last season in the Championship. So this is going to be a stark realization if they go down there and get nothing. They need to come away with something, I think, just for the mental state of the players and for the club to keep there and maintain the belief that they can survive this season. But I don't see any worse clubs, teams than Norwich and the whole league. They're kind of standing out as being below par, and they need to change it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Definitely an interesting game this. Looking forward to seeing how it unfolds. Brentford against Norwich, Saturday, 3 o'clock kickoff. And that's our final game that we'll be talking about on today's Dugout. Thanks very much, Matt Jarvis. Thank you, Trevor Stephen, for joining me on the Dugout. As ever, appreciate your time and appreciate your company. Don't forget, if you hit subscribe, that way you won't ever miss an episode of the show. Again, we'll also be looking back with a full review of the weekend's Premier League games on Sunday. So make sure you do that. But that's it from us today. And we'll catch you again next time here on Sports Social.
The Dugout, Premier League preview, Football Social Daily.